you may remember perhaps, or if you don't know his life, Swami Vivekananda went to America in 1893. He attended Parliament of Religions. It was the first Parliament of Religions. When he went from India to America, he was only told that there is a Parliament of Religions, and his friend said, why don't you go and address there? He had no warm clothes. The king of Khetri gave him a shawl as a gift. That was the only woolen thing that he had with him. He had no pass to present himself at the Parliament of Religions. He was not sent by any institution in India. He went on his own. He did not even inquire as to how he'll be able to address there. He was so innocent, like you. And then he found over there somebody. It's a good story actually. If you read the whole story, it's very interesting. He had to sleep in the first night in a small box on a pavement because he had no house, no place to go to in that cold in America. Later on, some professor came to know him, and then he took him to the Parliament of Religions office for registration. And then the man who was registering said, what is your credential? On whose behalf you want to address in the Parliament of Religions? So that professor in the meantime was so impressed by Vivekananda, he said, to ask credentials from this man is to ask the sun to give credentials for his light. It's a tremendous tribute that was paid to this man, to Vivekananda, unknown man, young man. To ask credentials from this man is like asking the sun to give credentials for its light. The sunlight is self-evident. There is no need of a credential. Sun and sun's light, both are one and the same. Similarly, this man and his credentials are the same thing. So that is how he was allowed to enter into Parliament of Religions. And the lectures began one by one. And somebody asked him, now you speak. And he was so shy, he could not even get up and spoke. Only 5 minutes were left for the time of that day to close the session. And then he was summoned and said, now you speak. He stood up and he spoke only 3 words. Sisters and brothers of America. Only 3 words he spoke, and the entire audience was so surcharged. They all stood up and gave standing ovation and clapped only on hearing these 3 words, sisters and brothers of America. And then he spoke only for 5 minutes. One day you should read the short speech. I think you can give one short speech.
Yes, it's there in Bhutichandra.
We have given that, yes. So you kindly, it's a very short speech that he gave for 5 minutes. But next day, in all the papers in America, he was on the headlines. None other, only this man, this young man, he was on the headlines. So it proves what he says here, that a man comes, he speaks only a few words, and the whole mass becomes influenced. This is the power. It is because when you speak, it's not the mouth that speaks, it is not the words that speak, it is the man who speaks, the spirit that is there. The tapasya that he had done, so much of tapasya he had done, he had walked around the whole of the country absolutely without any possessions, aparigraha, without any possessions at all, and all the time moving up and down with only one thing: let my country awake, let my country be great. All the time offering his country to the feet of the Lord, nothing else in his life. It is this tapasya. And the words that came out, they were not incidental words. The formula, sisters and brothers of America, whole of India is the sense of universality. And that universality was born in his tongue, as it were. When he said, sisters and brothers of America, there was no difference between Indians and Americans. They were all sisters and brothers. So that universality manifested in three words. It is that which produced such a tremendous effect. In fact, one of the greatest events of the last century was visit of Vivekananda to America. One of the greatest events. He went as a young man, without any possessions, without even knowing how to present himself in the Parliament of Religions, and he was turned into the greatest orator, the best representative of the Parliament of Religions. So, this is the proof of what he says here. In our families, there are the heads. Some of them are successful, others are not. In our families, there are the heads. Some of them are successful, others are not. Why? We complain of others in our failures. The moment I am unsuccessful, I say, so and so is the cause of the failure. In failure, one does not like to confess one's own faults and weaknesses. Each person tries to hold himself faultless and lay the blame upon somebody or something else, or even on bad luck. When heads of families fail, they should ask themselves why it is that some persons manage a family so well and others do not. Then you will find that the difference is owing to the man, his presence, his personality. Coming to great leaders of mankind, we always find that it was the personality of the man that counted. Now take all the great authors of the past, the great thinkers. Really speaking, how many thoughts have they thought? Take all the writings that have been left to us by the past leaders of mankind. Take each one of their books and appraise them. The real thoughts, new and genuine, that have been thought in this world up to this time, amount to only a handful. Only to a handful. Read in their books the thoughts they have left to us. The authors do not appear to be giants to us, and yet we know that they were great giants in their days. What made them so? Not simply the thoughts they thought, neither the books they wrote, nor the speeches they made. It was something else that is now gone. That is their personality. As I already remarked, the personality of the man is two-thirds, and his intellect, his words are but one-third. It is the real man, the personality of the man, that runs through us. Our actions are but effects. Actions must come when the man is there. The effect is bound to follow the cause. The ideal of all education, all training, should be this man-making. But instead of that, we are always trying to polish up the outside. What use in polishing up the outside when there is no inside? The end and aim of all training is to make the man grow. The man who influences, who throws his magic, as it were, upon his fellow beings, is a dynamo of power. And when that man is ready, he can do anything and everything he likes. That personality put upon anything will make it work. Now we see that though this is a fact, no physical laws that we know of will explain this. How can we explain it by chemical and physical knowledge? How much of oxygen, hydrogen, carbon, how many molecules in different positions, and how many cells, etc., etc., can explain this mysterious personality? And we still see it is a fact. And not only that, it is the real man. And it is that man that lives and moves and works. It is that man that influences, moves his fellow beings and passes out, and his intellect and books and works are but traces left behind. Think of this. Compare the great teachers of religion with the great philosophers. The philosophers scarcely influenced anybody's inner man, and yet they wrote most marvelous books. The religious teachers, on the other hand, moved countries in their lifetime. The difference was made by personality. In the philosopher, it is a faint personality that influences. In the great prophets, it is tremendous. In the former, we touch the intellect. In the latter, we touch life. In the one case, it is simply a chemical process. Putting certain chemical ingredients together, it may gradually combine and under proper circumstances bring out a flash of light or may fail. In the other, it is like a torch that goes round quickly, lighting others. The science of yoga claims that it has discovered the laws which develop this personality. And by proper attention to these laws and methods, each one can grow and strengthen his personality. This is one of the great practical things, and this is the secret of all education. This has a universal application. In the life of the householder, in the life of the poor, the rich, the man of business, the spiritual man, in everyone's life, it is a great thing, the strengthening of this personality. There are laws, very fine, which are behind the physical laws, as we know. That is to say, there are no such realities as a physical world, a mental world, a spiritual world. Whatever is one. Let us say, it is a sort of tapering existence. The thickest part is here, it tapers and becomes finer and finer. The finest is what we call spirit. The grossest, the body. And just as it is here in the microcosm, it is exactly the same in the macrocosm. These two words you should learn quite well, microcosm and macrocosm. Microcosm is something that is smallest. Macrocosm is that which is the largest. What is in the microcosm is also in the macrocosm, and what is in the macrocosm is also in the microcosm. The universe of ours is exactly like that. It is the gross external thickness, and it tapers into something finer and finer until it becomes God. We also know that the greatest power is lodged in the fine, not in the coarse. We see a man take up a huge weight. We see his muscles swell. And all over his body we see signs of exertion. And we think the muscles are powerful things. But it's the thin thread-like things, the nerves, which bring power to the muscles. The moment one of these threads is cut off from reaching the muscles, they are not able to work at all. These tiny nerves bring the power from something still finer. And that again, in its turn, brings it from something finer still. Thought and so on. So it is the fine that is really the seat of power. Of course, we can see the movements in the gross. But when fine movements take place, we cannot see them. When a gross thing moves, we catch it. And thus we naturally identify movement with things which are gross. But all the power is really in the fine. Fine means subtle. We do not see any movement in the fine. Perhaps because the movement is so intense that we cannot perceive it. But if by any science, any investigation, we are helped to get hold of these finer forces, which are the cause of the expression itself will be under control. There is a little doubt, there is a little bubble coming from the bottom of a lake. We do not see it coming all the time. We see it only when it bursts on the surface. So we can perceive thoughts only after they develop a great deal, only after they become actions. We constantly complain that we have no control over our actions, over our thoughts. But how can we have it? If we can get control over the fine movements, if we can get hold of thought at the root, before it has become thought, before it has become action, then it would be possible for us to control the whole. Now, if there is a method by which we can analyze, investigate, understand, and finally grapple with those finer powers, the finer causes, then alone is it possible to have control over ourselves. And the man who has control over his own mind assuredly will have control over every other mind. That is why purity and morality have been always the object of religion. A pure moral man has control of himself. And all minds are the same, different parts of one mind. He who knows one lump of clay has known all the clay in the universe. He who knows and controls his own mind knows the secret of every mind and has the power over every mind.